the people that we run into every day have a story, you know, and, you know, from the mailman to someone at the gas station to whatever. And we need all of us. We all are part of this coexisting thread of humanity. And I think it's so important that we all have a connection to each other.
Greetings, slow divers. I am your host, Farida, joined by my intrepid producer, Drew. How are you doing? Have you had a chance to look up at the sky today? Stretch, hydrate. Well, refill your water bottle, take a break, and then dive in with us today. On today's episode of The Slow Dive, we're joined by Sasha Marie Speer, an artist and filmmaker whose work opens a window into the human spirit. Through her lens, she explores how we connect to ourselves, to one another, and the wider world, creating films and visual experiences alive that live between emotion and reflection. Sasha's art blends photography, film, and immersive multimedia to evoke the spaces where pain becomes beauty and vulnerability transforms into strength. She invites us to slow down, to feel deeply, and to witness the moments that make us profoundly human. As the founder of Sawubona, a multicultural platform whose name means I see you in Zulu, Sasha has built a creative home for empathy and storytelling. Her recent films, Unborn, a poetic underwater meditation on motherhood and grief, and Identity Portraits, a tribute to the transgender and non-binary community, embody her mission to create art that sees and honors the soul. Sasha's work is a reminder that when we truly see each other beyond language, beyond difference, we rediscover our shared humanity. Welcome, Sasha. How are you?
Thank you so much. Hi, thank you, Farida. Thank you so much for having me and for that lovely introduction.
No, thank you for joining us. I'm so excited to dive in. And I'm like, okay. And like, you have this, I mean, we're going to get into Unborn, but like, it kind of works really perfectly with our like slow dive. We'll talk about the underwater photography. Okay. So we always have a segment called the icebreaker questions. So a couple of questions for you too. What are you currently reading?
I'm finishing Sinead O'Connor's memoir for book club. I have a monthly book club, so we're diving into her book. We get to discuss it on Monday.
Wow, I did not know that she had a memoir, but that's good to know. Mm-hmm. Okay. And unfortunately, we lost her a few years ago, so she was such a beautiful talent.
Yeah.
Okay, what was your favorite childhood movie or cartoon?
Huh, we didn't get to watch a lot. We had to play outside.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
I grew up on 20 acres in the Northwest, and my mom thought TV was kind of evil. So, but I think what I remember was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. My brother and I really loved that when it came out. And we didn't have, my mom would like, as soon as she found out Madonna existed, she's like, we're canceling cable. She was just terrified. So we had to like either rewatch a VHS a lot or whatever it was. So we rewatched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to death. So,
wow. Okay. So you said 20 acres on Pacific Northwest. Where exactly? Like where?
A town called Snohomish. It's no longer such a small town, but back then it was a one stoplight, beautiful town. It looks like Switzerland.
Wow.
My dad planted an orchard. So we basically had like an organic farm we grew up on before organic was a thing. Yeah.
So you come from an agricultural family. So like, do you have like a special connection to the land as well? I mean,
yeah, I think to nature, because we didn't have a lot of neighbors, right? So like when you're lonely as a kid, like where are you going to go? You use your imagination and you go outside. So I think that's still where I derive a lot of my creativity from, is either really long hikes or really long swims in the ocean and just letting my mind wander and tapping into something else. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what did you grow on your land? Like your dad, what did...
Gosh, well, so my dad was an entrepreneur and just a fascinating human being. And we had a little, before Home Depot existed, there was this little hardware store and they were throwing out fruit trees. I think they'd overordered or something. And my dad said, hey, I'll take those off your hand. Long story short, he ended up with 300 fruit trees.
Wow.
Of all these different varieties of cherries, of apples, of what then we would call like an Asian or Oriental pear. We had plums. I mean, you name it. And what wasn't for subsistence, my parents had other work. And so, but it was more than we could eat. So, you know, he said, well, hey, the neighbors can come. My parents are church people. The church could come, but they had to bake him a pie or make him jam or something like that. So it was just a really beautiful community thing.
I love that. That is beautiful. That is so nice. Okay. Yeah. So you probably have some really great recipes to share and you can put that in your book or something in the future. Yeah. That's great. When was the last time you felt Sasha?
I do a backpacking trip at Yosemite every year. Just it's kind of a good reset. And I think when I'm there, there's awe. And this last summer, in June, we camped up on North Dome, which I had never been to before. And it's exposed rock. And we're kind of a little worried. If lightning comes, you're kind of screwed. But it was just so beautiful. And we had a full moon. And it just lit up the whole sky. And it was just myself and the woman I was doing the backpacking trip with. And just us up there. And it was just really beautiful. And you just realize how, I don't know, how vast the universe is. You can see the whole solar system and how small we are, but yet how much potential we have as human beings.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, that's beautiful. All right. Well, I love knowing that a little bit. You grew up on, you have the agricultural experience, you like hiking. So I see how nature is a big, big inspiration for you in your works. Well, to get into your creative journey and philanthropy, I mean, we're going to talk about Unborn. And I know briefly we talked about all your philanthropic and social impact work, especially you put together a really successful event called Women of Courage that raised over $100,000. Tell me, how did you get into this space of art and philanthropy? And what has your journey been like up till now? Like, as far as how did you start? Or was it just like a natural, like, I like doing this. Let's just, you found your path, or was it something you wanted to do?
I think it was more kind of by accident, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I've been somebody who's always volunteered. I love giving forward. I don't call it giving back. It's giving forward. And
that.
I really, because of how I was raised and my parents, my mom was a flight attendant for almost 40 years. So we flew all over, traveled all over the world. And my dad came, like, built himself up from the dirt. And so, like, he had grown up dirt poor right after the Depression. He was an older father and really just taught us to be humble and to love on people, just love on people. You never know what people are going through. And he tended to hire people who are going through a tough time in his business and give them a shot. And so from a young age, I just always saw everyone as equals. And I've been curious about people. And when I moved to LA, I was just in shock that there's such a divide between, like, our South Central youth, especially. And, like, I mean, I live 10 minutes away by the beach and they're completely different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that we didn't know all of that existed. And then meanwhile, I had friends with, like, they're nonprofits in Africa and they're saving the starving children. And I was like, well, they're starving children over here. Does anyone care? But it wasn't as trendy. It wasn't as cool. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I couldn't stand it. It just, like, the whole idea of, like, compartmentalizing people like that drove me nuts. So I was like, well, I got to do something. And one of the ways I like to channel kind of that human spirit is through my, like, long form photo and video sessions. And so where I will do, like, a 2-hour, in a sense, interview with somebody, diving deep into a topic. And then in that, take photos in those moments to really capture their spirit and then tie that together with humanity. And I really wanted to do, and I had this vision, I wanted to do people toe to toe, face to face, in silence, but I wanted, like, the Black and brown youth of LA with, like, white politicians. And the guy I had who was a helping advise who works with a lot of politics there, he's like, they're never going to do that. They just won't do that. And I was like, oh, fine. Okay. So what can we do? He said, women. Women will help tie it together. Women will see each other more. And I was like, awesome. We're all dealing with similar stuff. So let's focus on women. So we brought Black and brown youth from LA, toe-to-toe, face-to-face with women of all different colors, but that were on more like the other side. So professionals, we had senators, you had people that were high up in the music industry and film with celebrities there. And through poetry and other than that silence, really seeing each other ended up being about 10 minutes, a little longer than we had planned. And that was the culmination of this whole project. And it just brought such a beautiful spirit and it brought people present to the work versus just talking about the work. And so that brought forth, over $100,000. Whereas the year before, I think, I don't remember, but I don't think they had raised nearly that. But yeah, it just happened by accident. I just wanted to do something. And we thought about a film, but films are really expensive. And I thought, well, what can I do with a camera and a microphone, you know? So that's how that came about. And it just was such a beautiful thing. And so I've continued to do work in LA that's giving forward to especially the kiddos, because they deserve a shot.
Yeah. And how was that received by the participants when you were like, how about the children and the politicians and the other side, I guess? How transformative was that for them? Did anyone have any epiphanies? What did they take from the experience that you created? And we're nurturing.
Meaning, in a sense of meaning and true, honest connection. and true interest, not just fluffy interest. And for that population, that's more like teenage youth into mm-hmm. some of them stay into their early 20s. Yeah. And we had one kid, I think that it was kind of highlighted the whole thing, had gone into that night, I guess was a little suicidal and decided because of that night to not follow through with their plan. So that for me was like, okay, like that, you just never know what people are going through. And it's so easy, especially in today's world, to feel really alone. And yeah, so I think that really, gave people hope.
How did that change you after that? I know we're going to get into a lot of your other projects, but for that one, that was like, you know, it was community centered and you were bringing together communities and people to connect. How did that change you or as an artist?
Well, there's a couple of things because I'm a white lady, right? So, and it's like, and I wouldn't grow up with race and all this conversation around race. So around that, you know, you have people going, well, you can't be this white lady saving black people. I'm like, well, right. Who else is saying that? Because that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying these are people I care about. So mm-hmm. that it really kind of messed with me for a little bit about, can I do the work I want to do? Because the work I love to do brings all different kinds of people together without having some kind of label or being whatever. And so it did take me a while to kind of come back and do something strong again, I think, from that, because I felt like, well, gosh, I don't want to disrespect these communities either. I don't want to come off like some white lady saving everyone. I certainly mm-hmm. don't have everything. Sometimes I have nothing and I give from that place. And mm-hmm. so it's a perspective, you know, what we see isn't always as things are. And but other than that, I think the power of community, the power of sharing a dream, the power of believing in something that's in your heart, because that took a couple of years to get off the ground. I was going through a really awful divorce and just my family had lost everything after my dad died. And we just went through really, really tough. My mom ended up in the psych ward. We just went through a bunch of tough stuff. And I didn't have the strength to deliver on that project for about a couple of years after I'd intended to, but it just kept eating away at me. And I was like, I got to finish this thing. And so I did. And I didn't do it alone. And so all these other people came on board and helped with that. So yeah, I think there's a power of sticking with something's burning in here. You just stick with it. You go.
And that work that we're talking about where can we see it? Is it also on your website? Because I know we're going to link everything.
Yeah, it's on my the Sasha Marie Spear website. Yes. I have it on there. Yeah. So there's just kind of a summary video. We ended up doing it in two pieces. So we mm-hmm. did Women of Courage part one and part two. Part one was a lot of the big photography work. We had it printed, you know, 8 feet long and some people's face right here. And that was an interactive experience. We had that filmed and then leveraged that for the second piece and leveraged that for fundraising abilities. And then the second piece happened a couple months later. So those videos are under the interactive tab.
Yes. I know. Well, I do you see yourself doing this again with another group?
I'd love to. You know, COVID happened and it was tough because things like that, you have to usually rent out a space and da-da-da-da-da. And we kept going up and down. And if you live in LA, like if you don't live in LA, it was different. But LA just kept shutting down and shutting down and shutting down. And it was like, oh, I don't know if I can, you know, stick to something in person like that with people so close that. And then be able to stick with the date. Now I would feel fine. So that's where I went back to kind of some film. I'm like, well, film we could do from, you know, in case we're all stuck at home. So that's was kind of the shift back to just the film aspect versus the interactive. But yeah, I'd love to do more interactive stuff. I think we're in a place now in the world where we need it and where we're open enough to be able to have it.
Tell me about your Sawubona and how that came about, this platform, this space that you've created, and what that means to you and what your goals are.
So I met the nonprofit that Women of Courage benefited was Youth Mentoring Connection. They're here mm-hmm. in South Los Angeles, run by Tony Luray, who's just an amazing human being. He blends a lot of like African and indigenous like healing in with kids, and a lot of these kids are coming out of gangs, and it really helps them give them kind of a new, in a sense, gang to belong to that's a healthier and helps them move forward, go to college and all the things. What they use as a greeting is Sawubona. And then you respond by Yebo Sawubona, which is, I see you seeing me. The idea is that a lot of these kids aren't seen. They're just passed by. And so it's really taking that moment to see the person. And I just loved it. It's just something that resonated with me. It resonates with how I try to move about the world, you know, and how I see the world and see oftentimes what we're missing and what we need more of. And, you know, I asked him, I said, oh, can I have your blessing? Like, I want to create this as something bigger. Do I have your blessing to use this word and just the inspiration? And he said, absolutely. So that's where that came from.
That's beautiful. So in service of others, being seen and seeing others, like that's like the empathy part, right? Like, I mean, all of us, I think art, this is where art's very transformative. And what, if I hear this correctly, now that I am getting to know a little bit more about your artwork, you're really focusing on like the isolation that people feel and like currently and like connecting it through your art. I find it to be, am I getting that correctly with Sawabona? Like what kind of works you want to, it's more community centered works and just showing people that everybody has a space, or am I getting that wrong?
Well, I don't know that I wish I would have loved to have like had it that organized before I did anything, but it, like, this is something that truly just came from a different place. I don't know. A lot of artists will talk about that. It's like something just shows up and it was, you have to do this. And so, yeah, all of my projects have been like, you have to do this. I think that it's been such a learning experience. I've traveled the world again, but living in LA, how much people are just going fast, and they don't pay attention. And the glitz and the glam. And I love fancy things. I love my tool and all the little things. And I love the shiny things too. But I think the richest moments in life, sometimes we forget that life can be rich. Mm-hmm. Those come from the deeper moments. And I think because I was raised with a lot of that and just, it's just what I enjoy. I enjoy these long conversations with people. I enjoy really getting to know people. I think other people deserve the opportunity to get to know those people too. The people that we run into every day have a story, you know, and, you know, from the mailman to someone at the gas station to whatever. And we need all of us. We all are part of this coexisting thread of humanity. And I think it's so important that we all have a connection to each other. So it comes from a very, very pure place. And I just want to give people the opportunity. It's not so much loneliness. It's like, it's a lack of awareness, I think. Mm. And when you can reflect that awareness, it does something, it shifts something in people. I did a couple of events. I don't know how much you had a chance to go down the rabbit hole on my website, but I did a couple of events after the Women of Courage where they were called Human. We did a series called Human. And we had all these interactive photo and video and like art, like interactive art experiences set up for people. And one of them was a cafe. And instead of food, it was a cafe of human connection. And so people had an opportunity to sit across from either someone they knew or a stranger. And through the prompts, through the menu, so to speak, they had a way of getting to know that person more deeply. People were saying like, oh my gosh, I don't know anybody in my life that like that deeply ever. I've never had a conversation like that. I've never interacted with a person like that before. So I think it's just this lack of awareness of how to truly connect to somebody. But we all have it. We just don't know where to find it or how to access it necessarily, mm-hmm. or we don't think anybody cares about it. And so when we have that ability to do that, I just think it fills that thing that's deeper that oftentimes can be that thing we are like, what are we chasing? What are we missing? You know, and it's mm-hmm. oftentimes I feel like it's that.
No, and I can feel your energy and your passion for connection and bringing that together and creating those spaces that are very dynamic and so important. And one of our things with our podcast, we always say we're interconnected. So this is why it's so great that you're on today, because all of your work, it's centered around connection and being seen and seeing. So I have to go forward and ask you about Unborn.
Mm-hmm.
That is a beautiful film. Tell us how that came about. What's the origin story of Unborn and how did you come up with this beautiful piece of work, this film that's now available to watch in entirety on YouTube and also on your website. Tell me about that process. Where did it come from?
So my partner and I were trying to have kids to no avail. Nothing was happening. And I waited till like the last minute to start trying, you know, as a woman, you're like, ah, shoot. Okay. Biological clock. Here we go. And then the pandemic happened. And so it was harder to get into a physician's office to get checked out. And it was like, okay, so I put it off for like a year. And then we finally went in and discovered that I'm not going to be able to have kids. Instead, I had this mass about this big. I was like, oh, that's why I have to pee all the time. And I was going to actually have to have a C-section. No baby. I teased that I birthed the blob. But it was kind of that kind of hits you in the face. Like, wait, like, am I not going to be able to get to be a mom? Like, I never thought this would happen. Like, you just always think like you're trying to not get pregnant. You're not thinking about, well, maybe mm-hmm. I won't be able to. And then you start looking at, well, maybe I can't have a mom, be a mom that way, but is there a different way to be a mom? You just kind of start to like, well, how is this going to look? Because life's going to look differently than I thought. And then I'm also an endurance ocean swimmer. So especially over COVID, a lot of our pools were closed. So we spent hours and hours and hours in that ocean swimming and swimming and swimming. And if you've ever swam here in the Pacific Ocean of California, you usually cannot see anything. So you are staring into an abyss. It's like the, you know, those zero tanks. They talk about that. I was like, ah, that's nothing. You go swim in our ocean for 3 hours. That's a lesson in that, you know, because so you're literally staring at nothing. Your body's moving. And so you've got to find a way to, like, I kind of check out a little bit and I kind of tap into this creative space. And it's like a meditation. And that's where a lot of things came from. And one day I just had a vision. I was like, I need to have women who are pregnant and they're nude and they're underwater and they're in slow motion and there's classical music and there's poetry. I've got to do it. And my friend and I that I do a lot of training with, we'll stop every like 10 to 30 minutes, depending on how long the swim is. And we stopped and I was like, oh, I have a film I have to make. You know, it just kind of, this epiphany came and she's just laughing. She's like, the things you come up with while we swim. So, and then I went about making that happen.
And how did you find people to your subjects and how did you prepare for that? And what was production like underwater? Like, I mean, it's a beautiful film. What was that like as a filmmaker?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of my work, so prior to this, when COVID first hit, I collected lullabies from all over the world from women and put those together. And my friends are used to, especially with Salabona, kind of crowdsourcing in a way, like our people, because I want real people. I don't want a bunch of actors showing up. So I was like, look, these are the type of people I'm looking for. Do you have anyone in your communities? Can you share this call to your communities? And so when this film, when it was like, okay, we're going to shoot this film, we need people who are pregnant and who are willing to be nude underwater, mm-hmm. just super vulnerable because your body's changing a bunch. And I wanted to cover some diversity. So there were certain, I want a woman who covers kind of this piece and this piece and this piece. I wanted different sizes and mm-hmm. shapes and hair colors and skin tones and tattoos, you know, all the things. And so, yeah, my friends went like, okay, and shared to their communities. And we had the women who ended up showing up were amazing. We had a number of women that dropped out too last minute. So because their bodies were changing, like for instance, one woman, her nipples were growing and that can happen. And she's like, oh, okay, I'm not comfortable sharing this, you know, like 2 days before the shoot. And I was like, okay, well, we need somebody wow. else then that's going to fit. And people, you know, were happy to. In that, you have to create a safe space. So I think that you have to have trust when you're going to create work that's real. Mm-hmm. People have to trust you. And one of the women from the nonprofit that I had helped with Women of Courage, who was part of that process, she worked in their office. She was pregnant and she was like, oh, I am doing this because I remember the last experience I had. I had done a film with just eyes going through different emotions as part of Women of Courage. And just was people just stand there for a long, long time and just watch as all these eyes flipped over. And she's like, I want to be part of your work. And I think that and then you'd see other women, I'd share some of my work. They're like, I want to be part of this artist's work. I trust her. I trust what she's going to share. And we filmed in a pool actually down in Long Beach and it was a warmer pool. So you don't be cold. And I didn't know, like, you know, one of the women couldn't really swim.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So it was just so precious. We had two other pregnant women carry her out to the deep end each time she needed to go film. And then we had her something to hang on to, but she'd literally have to like dunk herself and try to look graceful and then come up for a breath and be saved each time. But she did it because she wanted to share what we were after, which was like the vulnerability, but the beauty of pregnancy. And for so many decades, centuries, women have been covered up and hidden. And this was before Rihanna came out. Okay. We did this.
Yes.
Sharing her baby bump, but we wanted to show like the women are beautiful and this is something to be celebrated. So yeah. And production was, I think, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I wanted all women other than mm-hmm. we had a producer who was a gay guy. And I was like, that's okay.
Yeah.
He just really wanted to be part of this. But other than that, all women, I kept it small. I like to keep my sets really small because I think that you get too big, you lose that intimacy because mm-hmm. that connection needs to happen on set too. People need to really bond with each other. And there's a beautiful shot of these two women, like, and it looks like a Renaissance painting, right? They're mm-hmm. underwater, they're connecting. That was their idea. They had bonded just in prep and between all the takes. And they're like, we've got something for you. I said, okay. And they just came out with that. And I was like, this is beautiful.
No, it beautiful. Is incredibly yeah. It's a beautiful film. It's very ethereal. And like, I mean, obviously I was like, well, underwater in the womb, creating life. Like all of it is just so connected. Yeah. And water has that feeling. How long was the whole production process, like from actual setting up and creating the film? What was that whole journey like?
I did it pretty quick. So because a week after that was shot, I had my surgery and I didn't know how I was going to be. So I needed everything done because I didn't know how long I'd be down for. And I was down for quite a while. So we did it pretty quick from inception, like thought here to the edit being done was like 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did most of the editing in bed after surgery, and I would have to do it like 5 minutes at a time because I just couldn't take it. I was really anemic and I just was really like struggling. And if you've ever had a C-section, some people are fine, but some people are like, I couldn't get up. I couldn't go to the toilet by myself. It was just like, but I was like, I got to edit this film.
So Sasha,
we shot for 2 days. We shot one day in the pool with the women and one day in the ocean.
It's stunning work.
Yeah.
And very visceral and very evocative and ethereal at the same time. I feel like it's very, as a woman, I connected to it. With your fertility journey, how did making unborn, how did that connect with you? And how do you feel about it now?
So growing up, my family didn't talk about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were deep in like how we connected to people, but we didn't talk. Like I couldn't say I have a problem.
Yeah.
I couldn't even, when I got my cycle, I couldn't say anything. I had to hide that, I felt like, from my family. So I didn't grow up sharing stuff. But my partner now is like, you need to share things. It started really with Women of Courage. He's like, you need to share your story as part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my first foray into starting to share my own stories versus just other people's stories. And then when Unborn happened, yeah, I don't know. It just kind of, because it all showed up again in an instant in the ocean of like, you have to share this. And yeah, I think it healed. You know, it's always a healing process because I think something will always be missing because that didn't happen. But it's helped me to, instead of just burying that and stuffing that and trying to be strong and move forward, it's helped me to be more soft around it and more accepting of it and letting those, like the emotion move through me, if that makes sense, versus like hanging on to it. So, yeah, and it's helped me connect to a lot of other women. I'm super open about the whole thing. And so I think that's just been really helpful. You learn that once you stop stuffing everything down and you share, there's so many other people that are like, oh my gosh, me too. Or they have something similar or gives them permission, you know, to talk about whatever they're going through. I think, yeah. So it's been a really beautiful thing. I think if anything, like, yeah, I birthed something else that touched people in another way.
I think that is one of the most beautiful things about Unborn is that you took something that was transformed into a healing space for a lot of women, because personally, I relate to that as well. And giving yourself permission and then processing the grief of like not being a mom and like coming, leaning into it and being like, it's okay, but it is a process. And I think what you did was like celebrate motherhood, you know, which is, it's just beautiful because you're saying, you know, we're all in this space together. And I think that's something I feel very strongly. And I really applaud you for doing this, is having a, creating a space for women who aren't mothers, you know, who didn't have a chance to be a traditional mother in that sense, but have that mother energy. And they're still nurturing and giving back and mothering communities or organizations or giving back to children in other ways. That to me is very powerful, Sasha. Because there's many ways people can deal with their fertility journey or come to terms with that. And the fact that you so beautifully celebrate motherhood, I think it really speaks to your heart and to your mission and all the amazing work that you're doing. So I just want to say thank you for that, because I really love what you did with it. And I am. So where are you showing this? Have you had any like community? I know you've won a lot of awards for it, but are you doing any community engagement with your film Unborn and like doing maybe perhaps like a community screening or I know it's a short, but do you want to expand on Unborn or do more with it in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's still going around the world. And I think that has been a beautiful thing to see. I've even had people find it and be like, hey, we want to have it at our festival in this town. Like there's a town in Spain that has this every year. And it got to screen literally right across from the Alhambra, which is one of the seven wonders of the world. And I used to live in Spain. So I'm just like, they sent me a video and I was like crying. Like, this is so beautiful. It's outdoor. So I think, I mean, I would love to do more community. Sure. I would love that. Do I have the time and energy to create those events know. So it's been really nice when other people have had the events and I can show up as a filmmaker or send the video or whatever. I love that. So that's been kind of more the space that that's been in. I feel like my work comes from, I build the thing and other people can, like communities can leverage the thing, if that makes sense. So I'm not the person that's so good at the one-on-one mentoring, for instance, with the kids, but I'll build the thing. You can raise money that the kids will have. And then the people who are really good at the mentoring piece can go to the mentoring piece. So I'm not good at building the community engagement necessarily, like the screenings, but if someone has a screening, love to show up or contribute any way I can and help to, you know, yes, show the film and engage in conversation. That's, I feel like, where my gifts can live.
Are you going to do, you know, expand on the work of Unborn or maybe something in
that? My next film project that I'm working on is called Atacama. It's about, if you've ever read The Alchemist, I read The Alchemist when I was living in Spain.
Yes.
Yeah. I read it in Spanish first, then in English, and I just reread it. And it's just like, it's one of those things of like finding self, but really in a way you find out that where you came from in the beginning is your home, right? I feel like I'm kind of in that space in life. And so I'm working on just developing that project. That will be a feature, but it will be done in a similar style, very cinematic, very beautiful. I love to weave music and soundscape in with the narrative. So that's something I'm working on that I think will be a tribute to just keeping going. Yeah. You know, I think that where I'm at now in my life is like, wait, I got to wake up again tomorrow and do this again. Like, you know, sometimes it's just, and you go through your 20s, and I lived my life very fully. I was one of those people that had a lot of friends die young, and I didn't want to miss out on life. But then I did the things, and now you're like, but now what? I'm still here. And then, okay, yeah, I don't have a kid. So what am I supposed to do with my, there's something missing. There's something you've got to give forward to. And so I think that there's that. And then there's that realization of the beauty again of sometimes of those little seeds that were planted of when you're young and how those things helped you to become who you are. And so, yeah, that's just more of what I'm developing, but it's developing in this space right here. So it's going to be a minute. So I'm very, this is how the creative process goes.
No. That sounds really promising and great. So I will definitely follow up with you on that. What would you tell someone who's wanting to start off making films or art films or just telling stories, like how to stay motivated or
I just want to say, because I've done a lot of like podcasts and then I live in LA, so I do a lot of panels and things like that. Yeah. I almost always ask this question and I'm like, just make the damn thing. Just make it. I think so often what I run into are people want to take me to lunch and ask me like, that people want like permission. Like you give yourself the permission, especially in our world. We don't live in that world where somebody owns what you can share with people. Mm-hmm. Make the damn thing. And if you're not sure, just like you learn by doing. Your first one, someone gave me a great analogy that I love. Like sometimes you're like, if you've ever made pancakes, your first pancake might be a little wonky. Sometimes the first couple are a little wonky, but eventually you're making some good pancakes. So like, don't be afraid of that first one. Get out there and share. The important part is the exercise of it, is that you are expressing what you really want to share, not what you think other people want to watch, but what you really want to share, what's burning in here. Share that and then share it again and then share it again.
No.
And try to do it alone. Do it in community. Ask for help. People want to contribute.
I like what you said. Don't wait for permission. Why is it that we are like a lot of us feel like we need to wait for permission? Because that's a very just make the damn thing. But why do we hold ourselves back? What is that?
I'm gonna open up a whole nother rabbit hole here. No, if you think about it, like educational system and just oftentimes how we're raised is like do X, you'll be rewarded with Y versus create something from scratch, or where do you want to go? Or, you know, we're really like not taught to like be our own drivers of our world, you know, and our own drivers of shaping that world. So I think that sometimes people are looking for someone to tell them to go here or tell them how to do it. And oftentimes for what your unique expression is, there isn't a mentor. You're your mentor. Yeah. You've got to trust the thing in here. You've got to get in touch with that.
Yeah, I love that. Yes. Be a free thinker. Don't just follow your heart. You don't need permission. You also have a book of poetry. I'm a phenomenal woman. Let me ask you about that. How do you feel like poetry serves your soul, and how does that help you like as an artist? Where do you source that inspiration for poetry?
Yeah. So I was a double major in college, and one of my majors was Spanish language and literature. And so I actually read almost all my poetry in Spanish.
Wow.
And I think still a lot of my poetry will come through in Spanish, not always English. So I have to translate it back. So on Unborn, by the way, if you watch it, there's a Spanish translation and a French translation, because it did show at Con. The Spanish translation is my favorite, because I feel like it just, those words just hit. There's more emotion in the words. I feel like poetry, and I don't, it's funny because I still don't consider myself a poet yet. I've published all this poetry, but poetry like strips things down to the essential. And I love that. And even like, I love music, but the music sometimes can be a distraction. When you just listen to the poetry, it's the cadence of the words and each one matters. And I just think sometimes we need that simplicity. See, I love poetry. In that book, I want to say, because the surgery for me was just really hard. And those poems came straight out of my journal. I didn't change them. All I did was type them up. But I wanted to show things raw instead of, edited and edited and re-edited. And then after I talked to this person, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to show the things that weren't quite so perfect as well. And it's called Phenomenal Woman. And then you open it up and there's this beautiful woman. It's a drawing I actually did when I was 15. That's on the cover.
Wow,
there.
Yes.
And then you open it up and it says, I am not okay. And I think that's how so many of us operate, is like, we look so good, or we just hold ourselves up so good, but inside something's not right here. And almost again, we don't have permission to say that that's not right. And so I wanted to really like just give the permission to share that, but in its raw form. So allowing all the mistakes to be there too, or if it didn't quite rhyme, like whatever. Like the point was to be truthful with myself and to share that. And so I had been sitting on that poetry for a little while, and I felt like, you know, now's the time to share it. I couldn't like have a conversation in the same day as I like would try to walk for a few minutes. I couldn't move for 2 days afterwards. Wow. That's kind of how my rehab went. And so trying to rehab and trying to function, I'm usually super high energy, swimming in the ocean. I literally was like sitting on the couch watching Netflix, which isn't me. Yeah. I watch things I'd like, you know, I caught up on all that TV I missed when I was a kid. But I was like, I need a goal. I need something to like, that's a goal where I can stand, because I couldn't stand for a long time either. I just didn't have that stability after the C-section. And I needed to wear heels. I wanted to wear heels again. And like, that's harder to stand in heels. And so I was like, I'm going to publish this book and I'm going to do a reading here in LA. That's going to be the first thing that I'm dressing up and all the things. And so I did that to really just kind of, yeah, celebrate the whole woman, including those imperfect parts.
It's beautiful, beautiful. How do you, this is an odd question, but like a lot of your work is just so vulnerable, right? It's so personal. How do you tell someone, or how, what advice would you give to someone who wants to share something personal and channel that or transform that using art? To take those first steps, like where do you get the courage to share something personal? Because I also believe in what you said, like sharing is healing, like sharing your own story. You open it up to other community members and support, and people are like, oh, wow, I also went through this, or I experienced that too, and that relatability. But how would you tell someone if they have something they really want to share? And they're struggling to maybe, they know they want to do it, but they're not there yet. Like, is there any?
You mean like from an art perspective or just as a human being sharing?
I'll leave it up to you. Yeah. Both. As an art perspective first. Yeah.
Sure. I think as an art perspective, there's power in all sharing. But as an art perspective, I think it's the most powerful, because the way that it's translated to people, it's almost like it morphs itself into exactly what they need right in that moment.
Hmm.
And you affect more people. And then you create that community of the vulnerability again. So it's like, oh my gosh, it's like Taylor Swift with the breakup song. She's not the only one with a breakup.
Right.
So like, it was a conversation with one person, right? But she's become a global brand. I think it's just, and it's hard. I've had almost a nervous breakdown every time a project's come out, just as a heads up, because of how I was raised. I was raised to not share these things. I was raised that almost that like, we had a lot of like verbal abuse in my house growing up with my mom. She's better now, but there was just a lot that was unhinged there growing up. And so I still have that nervous system response of like, oh my gosh, I share this and my safety's at risk, but I know better. And so I share, and it's a process to share it. And yeah, I think that you just have to, and you have to get through the thing. Like all the feelings are going to happen, but you got to do it anyway. And I think sometimes if we can move ourselves out of the way of it, like it's not about me. None of my work's about me. My work is bigger than that, right? It's about us as human beings and how the things we go through and how we relate to the world around us and to each other. And so if you can kind of get out of your own way, and it's not about you in the end, right? Like you will feel so much better after you've shared versus trying to stuff that down inside.
Wonderful. That's very empowering. And thank you for sharing your vulnerability, because like I said, I always feel like a lot of us, we need trailblazers like yourself to kind of make it okay for us to share. And I do find that art is incredibly therapeutic and healing and also entertaining as well and beautiful and immersive. But this is really, I see the humanity in your work, and it shows visually speaking to you. It's and all everything you're doing and impact as well. And what was it, giving forward, which I like that. I like that, because now instead of giving back, we just continued the chain of just giving forward. I love that. Yeah. Where can we get, if someone wants to get in touch with you, Sasha, where can we find you? What are you, I know we have your website for Unborn Identity, but what are you working on next? Is there anything?
Well, I think, so I've got two Instagrams. I've got my personal one, which is surfing in sandals, because like nobody does that. And I just think it's cute. That's mostly my personal stuff. A lot of my ocean swimming, but that's where I'm more engaged as a full human being. And I do share some of my art and stuff and stories. Sawabona.us is the Instagram for all the art projects. It's SawuBona.us. And then websites, SashaMarieSpear.com. I share all the things. And then salbona.us is really just mostly just the film projects.
I love that. Well, we have a final closing segment. We ask a couple of reflective questions before we say goodbye. So I'm going to ask you, what does home feel like?
Huh. It's funny. I started writing in my journal like 10 years ago. Again, my other half is like, you need a morning routine. I'm like, I have one. I drink coffee. And he's like, no, you like need a routine. So I like read and journal and like do all these things every morning. And one of the things I always write is like, I'm home. Like it's been a recurring theme, because I feel really at home here in LA, especially in our, we just have beautiful light that comes in our home. We have our puppy dogs and surrounded by beautiful art. I think home feels where your nervous system's at peace. Like it's where there's an inner calm. I also feel at home in the ocean. I feel at home when I'm out in nature, especially if I'm doing a backpacking trip and totally off the grid. I just feel 100% at home. I feel calm. I feel in the flow of things. I feel at home on set. Oh my gosh, one of my favorite places to be is on set, creating magic.
Wonderful. How can we be better humans daily?
Smile. Say hello. I mean, I can't tell you how often, like when I'm walking outside and I'll be like, good morning. And so many people have their headphones in, or they just look down. It's like, I'm not trying to sell you something, you know? Yeah. It's like, we live by a beach town. No one's trying to sell you something ever. I get that if you're in New York, people will be like, lady, whatever. But smile, say hi, ask how someone's day's going, you know? Like just care. Yeah. I know all the names of all the people that work at the little grocery store by me, you know? And it's just like, just go in and ask how their kids are doing, how their grandkids are doing. That matters.
It does.
It doesn't have to be complicated.
I love that. Thank you so much, Sasha, for joining us today. This was such an illuminating conversation, and we are going to link your films, your books, your websites, your Instagrams to our episode guide. And I am looking forward to all the amazing works you're going to be creating, especially The Alchemist, because that was one of my favorite books. So for sure, like I thank you for being vulnerable with us and using your stories and your experience to create such beautiful art for human connection. Sasha, you're doing great work. I learned so much today in our interview, so thank you for taking the time out with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
No, of course. Till next time, Slow Divers, I'm Farida. You are listening to The Slow Dive. Please make time to listen, reflect, and connect.
Thanks for listening to The Slow Dive. Please be sure to subscribe and give us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq and edited by Drew Franzblau. Our theme music is Dive by Ciro.